I'm Jason, Jason Michael Perry, the man with three first names and host of Thoughts on Tech and Things. This show is where we break down the tech shifts shaping business, culture, and the way we work. Or maybe just say things a little simpler. What happens when we can't tell what's real anymore? A few months ago, I asked a simple question in one of my newsletters. What's a photo? And it seems like a simple question, but it's a moment that is supposed to capture truth. But today, with phones, photos are a very different thing. Every photo you take is digitally enhanced. It's now easy to take a photo and add a person to it, remove items from a photo, and this doesn't require any skill. And it doesn't just stop there. If you start to think about some of the things that have happened recently, here in Baltimore, a principal at Pikesville High School was almost suspended, well, actually was suspended and almost fired, after it was determined that using an AI tool called 11 Labs, that the athletic director had faked his voice and created audio of him saying racist and sexist things. This caused a national uproar, but this also starts to ask the question, what is real, right? That day of us thinking, is that Photoshopped? We are way beyond that. Fakes are different, they're sharper, they're cheaper than ever to create, and anyone can create them. And in this world, you have to constantly ask, what really is real? And how do you tell? So on today's show, I'm joined by my good friend, Joe Binge. Joel is a message therapist. Yes, you did hear that correctly. A message therapist at Message Specs, where he helps teams cut through chaos and communicate clearly. He spent the last decade working in marketing communications for risk and cybersecurity. He's also the author of Be a Nerd That Talks Good and a host of the podcast Nerds That Talk Good. Joel and I have gone back and forth on this topic for quite a while now, so I knew he was just the right person to bring in to unpack this moment. And so let's get into it. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about this.
Oh, you and me both. So, Joe, I should probably start by letting everyone know that you're actually here as a real person and that this isn't an 11 Labs voice AI model of some sort.
As far as you're concerned, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you prove it somehow? Can you let everyone know that you're actually real?
Yeah, sure. Here, I can... person in the control room, I hate this. I'll tap on the mic, tap on the table. Right? This is a little hard to fake.
Yeah, okay. But you know, something to let everyone know that this is like actual reality. So at the start of the show, I asked the question, what is a photo? And a few years ago, I used some AI generating tools to create images. And with AI tools, those images had six fingers or strange appendages or things that made you realize that something about them was fake. I've also tried to deepfake myself by creating images. And I'm just wondering, do you have a system that you use when you're looking at things on social media or elsewhere to feel like you can tell what's real when you see a photo?
You know what? I used to think I did. And I think we were all behind the times of the state of the art. Like the sixth finger man, unless you're watching The Princess Bride, is usually a dead giveaway. Or, you know, you're on Facebook and you see the crab Jesus pictures, right? And you're like, that is very fake. The skin is very glossy. You know, the eyes just don't track. But as technology has gotten better, you know, I think there's kind of a sleeper movement of a lot of AI-generated I wouldn't even call it slop, because I think a lot of this stuff can be very useful, which I hope we get to talk about. But, you know, that things pass off as real way too easily. At the same time, you know, you can watch plenty of movies out there where they've de-aged a character. Yeah. And it's never as good, you know. And it's like you can immediately spot it. I wonder why Hollywood has not yet been able to crack that deep fake of an actual human being. But, you know, your guy using 11 Labs can do a voice, or somebody using, you know, Google's VO3 can, you know, whip something up. It's only 8 seconds, but that really passes off. So, you know, I catch myself sometimes wondering.
It's a place where I feel like you have to just assume everything is fake until it's proven otherwise. But still, when I see an image that turns out to be AI generated, there's something like there's a weird tingle that I get when I see it. Like something seems off, and it's hard to place it. You know, it's you know, sometimes it's maybe like a little bit of a glossiness to the face or certain characteristics. But images that are black and white are things that are sometimes a bit more difficult to tell.
I saw a really good account on TikTok, and I don't know if it was their original video, but it was a bunch of those little really quick clips, and it started out very straightforward. It was a news broadcaster. You know, we're coming to you from the border of Canada. Canada has just declared war on the United States, and she turns to the person in the studio, and the person in the studio goes, "Yes, that's a very scary situation, except I'm not even real." And then it cuts to another person, and they're in a flood, and you know, there's a weather report, and all of a sudden there's a shark in the background, and like we've got stories of sharks coming up the Mississippi River, and by the way, I'm not real. And so the creator was making these things even more absurd as the video realm went on. But those first two videos, before they started throwing in like the lizard men or the fake moon landing, they really catch you off guard. And I think one of the biggest tells is the quality of the video. You know, mm-hmm. your reporter on the street is not shooting with a movie quality camera. But once they figure out how to mimic, you know, iPhones, once they can mimic, you know, smaller cameras and get the same type of camera artifacts, you know, the people are pretty darn near indistinguishable. It's the quality of the shot, I think, is the giveaway right now.
Yeah. I'm reminded of, like, I guess one of the biggest deep fakes of all time, which is the War of the Worlds, you know, the radio broadcast, and everyone is what's happening, right?
The new one with Ice Cube? Or,
you know, I don't know about this one, Ice Cube. That one is it's questionable, to say the least. But in the new one with Ice Cube, there are apparently a lot of vignettes of real video that are kind of put together in combination with fake video, with, you know, and just like you're saying, that is harder to tell the difference. Is when you start to mix reality with something that's fake, and then it's like, well, I know that's true. That's a video that I know I saw in the air, and it almost starts to add some level of like trust, makes you trust, you know, the other content that comes after the fact, or a particular person being part of a clip. And images were one thing, but we are increasingly moving into a world, just like you mentioned, Joe, that the video content is getting so good. So, you know, it's not there yet, but it's getting to that point where just that right mix can make it hard to tell the difference.
Yeah, you're really looking at trust transference, right? Which is a technique that you can use for good, right? You can, you know, maybe I work with a lot of companies that are developing out their messaging, or they're developing out their marketing, and they can point to something that people know is true, and then they can point to a claim that they would make, right? And that's trust transference, or getting testimonial from somebody else. But you put, you know, a former president's face up as a clip within a movie, and then you immediately cut to your fake aliens. You know, there's almost that trust transference, that persistence of memory from the one clip to the next clip, that, you know, your gut kind of leans in and go, like you said, well, I know that guy's real, and so this, I don't know, this big alien bug with eight eyes, but looks pretty good, right? Mm-hmm.
But suddenly Independence Day is a real thing. Talking about trust, one of the things that tech companies are doing to try and give us the ability to trust it again is building in tools, or building tools that will make it easier to detect what's fake and what's not. Do you know of any of these tools that are coming up, or ways that companies are approaching this?
Yeah, I know that a lot of, especially the large language models who are generating text, if you're experienced with those different models, and you've prompted them a lot, and you've used them as you know, I assume you have, you can tell when something was a ChatGPT, or when something came out of Claude, or when something, you know, came out of one of the other models. You can kind of learn by the language and by the pattern, and that's just based on their training data. And so a lot of these companies have been able to fingerprint their output. and they're trading those fingerprints so that, you know, we've seen all these check if something was written by ChatGPT or not. And what it's basically doing, the good ones, there are a lot of crappy ones out there. As a content guy, you know, I can write something by hand and it can get flagged by the checker just because, you know, I'm a good writer. But for the people who just sort of generate off some text and plop it into one of these checkers, the good checkers are pretty good about saying this likely came, you know, within a certain confidence variable from this platform. The challenge that I see is, and, you know, I never recommend my clients just straight up use LLMs or ChatGPT for their content, but it's great in the generation of their content, is that once you put the human hand back into it, and you massage it, and you edit it, and you clean it, maybe you take a picture that was generated in one platform and move it into another platform, those fingerprints, those metadata, if it's image or video or even text, those things get lost. And so it's, how do we keep the persistence? How do we keep the fingerprint to say, you know, either this is AI generated or this is authentic? I did a presentation at the DEF CON Hacker Conference a couple years ago, and we had a researcher, an expert out who was working to authenticate photographs from war zones or photographs from history and posterity that were not digital photographs. They were actually taken by film. And you want to be able to say, well, was this photo manipulated? Was it lightened? Was it darkened? Did we darken somebody's skin? Did we remove somebody from the background? How do we know not just even that this photo was generated, but that this photo was authentic and not modified? And so there are a lot of technologists that are working on that. But my concern is your average person doesn't have access to what's under the covers. They don't read the metadata. You know, mm-hmm. They're looking at things likely from a phone screen that have been screenshot, captured, copied, reposted. And you, in that loss of fidelity of the image, you also lose that proof.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. Some of these social media tools are capable of looking at these watermarks or fingering, you know, abilities to say, hey, this is AI generated. But a screenshot of something may not give you the same watermarking abilities. At the same time, there's also this consistent talk about the combination of AI generated images with, you know, real photos and other images that a designer may combine these things together, and so they're AI artifacts, but the composite thing is not AI. Just like I may use elements of AI from ChatGPT and combine that with my own writing, and so it's going to be an interesting place that we're in, and getting to a place that we can, that people can trust what they're looking at, but also in a place where there's so much talk of, you know, what's fake news and what's not. You have to imagine that even the tools that are there may not give a lot of confidence to the fact that something is actually real or not real. You know, it's this uncanny valley that we're living in. I want to change topics a little bit to talk about some of the ways that AI is specifically being used for social engineering, because I think that's the natural progression of this. When we talk about tools that can clone your voice, when we talk about something that can take an image and can transform it into something else, it opens the door for mischief. One of the types of things that are starting to happen a lot now are voices that are being cloned. If anybody who's talked on the internet, if your voice has been used in a public place, your voice is, there's enough of your voice to clone your voice. And that means that there's enough out there that someone can simulate your voice making a call to your mother or your father. And this has opened up the doors for social engineering in a way that we've never seen possible. You have a son, you have a family. Like, how do you protect yourself from these things? Or what do you tell people when they say, what do I do in this kind of moment?
Well, from a family perspective, I go back to a technique that my parents used with me when I was growing up it was the 1970s and 80s. We had, you know, secret family passphrases. And sometimes, you know, and it started out, I won't say what ours is, but it started out where, you know, if I was at the store.
Pineapple, right?
It's not a pineapple. Oh, man, now we're going to have to change it. Anyway, so, you know, it was this phrase where, look, if we're going to have to send the neighbor or somebody you don't know to pick you up from school, we're going to give them this passphrase. And if they say it, you know it came from us. It's something that you have to guard very closely. But now that my parents are growing and that, or well, they've grown. Now that my parents have matured and they're facing this new realm where, you know, they pick up the phone and, you know, I'm a small business owner. And, you know, I might say, you know, somebody might clone my voice and say, hey, Dad, you know, hey, could you wire me 10 grand because, you know, I want to make an investment in my business. And, you know, my father, who, if you're listening right now, Dad, I don't need it right now. Okay, so don't worry about it.
Send it to me instead.
I send it to you instead. They could say, you know, what is the secret password, the secret phrase? And it has to be something, this is typical basic cybersecurity. Has to be something that nobody could guess, can't be related, can't be a pet's name, you know. Those things are still very powerful. But when we get into the realm of business, you know, I don't know, you know, you're a CFO or your CEO, you know, you're not on that level. So, you know, I think we're going to be getting to a point where we have tools to solve this infrastructure, you know, like the old nuclear break the code and, you know, do you concur that this is, you know, we're going to have to have those types of mechanisms. The trick with a lot of this fraud is it's not anything new that we mm-hmm. haven't seen before. People used to get letters in the mail. People used to get emails. You know, it's now that it's gone to voice, it's not that much different. But I think the speed at which people react, that is where people get caught up.
Just you mentioned your coworkers. If anyone who knows of phishing, or most likely your job is required you to take some form of security class, and one of the things that you're consistently told in terms of phishing is the sniff test, right? If you receive an email with that just feels weird, has misspellings, things like that, that maybe that's a sign. But now with large language models and ChatGPT, you know, these phishing emails are getting much more sophisticated. They're starting to sound like the folks who may have written them, and just like you said, you know your mother, you know your father, you know your you know, you have a relationship and you can create these bonds that allow you to identify and tell things are different. But when we're talking about your CEO or your CFO possibly asking you to go buy gift cards, right? That's the common thing. That you don't necessarily have that connection to know, is that their voice? Is that their tone? And in most organizations, there's a, you know, you need to just assume something is wrong. You know, trust. You can trust, but trust and verify, right? Like if someone sends you a message, send them a message using another trusted mechanism of communication to see if that's actually them and some of the different ways that you can kind of start to combat these things, right?
Yeah, and cybersecurity, we'll call that the zero trust.
Zero trust.
And, you know, for all the nerds out there, you see zero trust all over the place. It is really just a philosophy. And it's not that I don't like you. It's not that I don't want to, you know, exchange with you. It's just that every step I want to verify. So I come from a position of zero trust, not necessarily distrusting, but zero trust. We haven't established any trust. And then I just need you to prove it to me. And the weirder the circumstances are, you know, if I get a text from a number and it says this is the CEO and that's not the CEO's number I've ever seen, you know, your spidey sense, as you said, the little hairs on the back of your neck should be standing up, and then you press them a little bit, and then you ask or you verify, or, you know, what are we teaching our kids? If you see something once on the internet, nothing is ever once on the internet. If you don't find it anywhere else, chances are it's not real.
This comes back to sources on the internet. You know, there's increasingly content that's generated using AI and AI tools, and this is just a normal part of our life and reality. But taking the step and did you Google that thing to see if that thing actually happened is not like that's zero trust. It's just saying, all right, but let me just check and make sure. Something that's interesting, and as we start talking about trust and reality, that's happening right now in a court system, is that lawyers have made the mistake of adding cases that are generated by AI that are just absolutely not real. But more frighteningly, there have been a number of cases where the judges have not caught the fact that generated cases are part of these filings or part of these cases that are being and they're making their way through. Right? It's a frightening idea, but I've started to use tools like Perplexity, which it's not perfect, but it does give you the ability to ask a question and see sources, you know, and see the things that are being cited, or to just try and verify if something that you have is actually real. Do you have like a system that you use if you see an article or a piece of content and you're like, is this real? Do you do something more than Google it, or do you just Google it?
You know, the first thing I do is actually in that moment, I have a personal litmus test that I use, which is something that I teach my clients on how they should communicate, which is borrowing from Aristotle, and you've heard this before, the emotional hook, the logical piece of information, and then the trust builder, right? So it's the heart, head, and gut. The first thing I do is ask myself, is this piece of information, is this piece of content emotionally charged? Is it trying to make me feel something? Right, because if I'm looking at news, I don't want anything that has an emotional bent, that has an agenda. I want something that's giving me a straight up piece of information. So if they're using flowery language, inflammatory language, large superlatives, this is the greatest scandal ever. Well, then I immediately know either it's fake, or it's taken out of context and it's been bent. So that's my first test is. Is this emotional? Is this trying to make me feel a way? The second is, can I find this information anywhere else? And that's where you turn to Google. That's where you turn to, you know, trusted sources of news, mm-hmm. trusted channels, trusted peers. And then the last one is, you know, again, that gut feeling. So, and I get caught by it all the time. You know, I'm like everybody else. I'm scrolling. I'm consuming content. A lot of it is, you know, it's a dopamine hit. It's a ha ha. But at the moment I start feel angry, I'm like, okay, there's agenda here. I want to understand what's underneath it. I want to understand, you know, is this a person I've ever seen? If it's an account that I've never seen before that's just popping up, I'll just immediately scroll on. One, I don't want to reward the algorithm by giving it the attention, and I want to move on to the ones that I know are going to be more likely to be trustworthy.
So, I think this brings us back to the start. What is a photo? Like, you know, are the words photo? Does it really last anymore? Maybe we need another word for what we're looking at when we see images on the internet. Maybe photo's not it. I don't know. You have any ideas?
Yeah, I do, because you know the model that I tend to think of is the difference. I'm an eyeglasses wearer, right? I call my company Message Specs, and that's on purpose. So there is, as the philosophers would say, the thing as it is, but we're always looking at things through lenses, right? And the lens that you put in front of something can be the focus. And this is not to say that something that is artificially generated cannot also represent the unvarnished truth. This is what art is. And I don't want to get into the whole, is AI art art? But, you know, if I want to convey a feeling and I'm not a great photographer and I can't get the look that I'm looking for and I can do it by generating, I'm not trying to fool somebody. I'm just trying to convey a message. You know, I think that is a different thing than a photograph. You know, it's a graphic. I think that's where it is. We're still in that graphic. And, you know, we don't know what they're going to be in 3 to 5 years. So, you know, I think as language always evolves, we have to start adopting a different language. So
before we go out, I wanted to stop and talk about something that I think is just the perfect way to end this. And it's a short film by a guy named Hashim Al-Ghali. It's called Prompt Theory. And it's a collection of these quick VO3 8-second vignettes of a series of people asking themselves the question of whether or not they're real or not. Are they the result of a prompt, or is this are these humans? Is this reality? And it's really just an interesting thing to think about. I think as we talk about what realism is, what is real, and it really kind of bookends this entire conversation. So maybe all this is just one big prompt. Maybe we're not real after all. Maybe it's a simulation, right? Who knows? I'm Jason Michael Perry. I'll see you next time.